Welcome to the 12th edition of the Smuggler's Den, brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and as always, I'm joined by...
Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards. And as always, you can reach us at our Facebook page, which is The Smuggler's Den, and email us directly at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com.
And I have started a new thing where I'm streaming games for now on Twitch TV. My channel is Tiny Grimes. There are currently 12 videos there, and I post on the Facebook page when I'm going to be streaming. So if you've always wanted to see me stream games and you're missing out on when it's happening, you should be on our Facebook page and you would not be missing out.
You can also, not that we're plugging Twitch TV in any way, but if you would like to, join Twitch TV as a member, you can favorite and follow Tiny's channel, and it'll send you an email anytime he starts streaming, and that way you can have a direct kind of like, Tiny is streaming right now, and it'll come into your inbox and you'll be ready to go.
Yeah, and what I've started doing is starting a stream just for about a minute, 30 minutes before I'm going to stream, since I can't work out a schedule for streaming. I have a life that I'm trying to lead here, so I'm just streaming when I have some free time. So that will help you be appraised of when it's going to happen. So we do have a sponsor for the show, Game Empire Pasadena, and we do not accept random sponsors, only sponsors of awesome places or things. And I must say, Game Empire Pasadena is quite awesome. The owner there is a great owner. You know he's a great owner because he hires great employees. Davis is an amazing manager of the store, and he's really helped us get our league going. They always have the stuff we need there. And the property itself is phenomenal.
Yeah, the store is amazing. It has a huge gaming area as well as a huge inventory. I've never actually counted the tables. What is it, probably close to 20 to 30 tables in the back there?
Something like that. A surprisingly huge amount for a Los Angeles store.
Yeah, and very conveniently located right off the 210 in Pasadena. So it's always really easy to get to as long as there's no rush hour traffic, which I guess is most of the time.
And you can purchase product from them directly at www.gameempirepasadena.com. So if you're ever in town, especially on a Wednesday night, let us know. Come on by and play in our league.
If you ever know you're going to be in town with a really good lead time, let us know if it's going to be on the weekend, and maybe we can even schedule a weekend event to incorporate some, you know, external meta blood into our meta for a very brief period of time.
Yeah, that would be great. Our meta is like a vampire and can always use new blood. All right, Ben. So there was a regional this weekend. And how'd you do? Let me guess, you won.
God, I wish I had won so bad. And as much as I would love to have a bye in Worlds that comes with winning, really, really, all I really, really want is one of those metal force coins.
That's not true. You want to mount a trophy as your hood ornament on your gas-efficient Prius.
I don't even want the trophy. I would donate the trophy to some, you know, Goodwill somewhere. I just want that metal force coin so bad.
So that means you didn't even get second, Ben? You are tarnishing our legacy.
I know. There was an 11-player turnout at the JJ Gaming Lounge in Chatsworth, California this past Sunday. 11 people showed up. I placed into the top four and lost my top four match to Tyler in our meta, who went on to win the match. So I guess if I was going to lose, at least it was to the person who won overall. Kind of depressing. The second place player I did beat at one point, Neil, who is an amazing player, and took Tyler to three games in that final match, had an exact tie for their dark side, light side first switch off. And it came down to the dial being at 11 for their third game, with Tyler having a very superior board presence, but just having that, like, that problem that light side has sometimes of just pushing through enough damage to take out the objective. It was very tense. The store closed. We had to stay there while the game finished. It was amazing, and the people who were there, the people who were running it, Araz, who was the TO for the tournament, they did an amazing job. The purchase price into the tournament actually bought us pizza, so we didn't even have to leave for lunch. We just ate pizza on the premise while the games, you know, in between games. So we just kept going. It was a really, really fun regional experience.
Yeah, I wish I could have been there, but Mother's Day. So the only people that were there were, as someone in our described them, as monsters.
No, I think I described it as people who had made the correct decisions in their life, right? Who either had moved far away enough from their mothers.
Or murdered them.
That Mother's Day does not require them to, you know, bow and be present. Or those of us who haven't been ridiculous enough to spawn human offspring that then requires us to attend Mother's Day.
Ah, I see. Yes, I make ridiculous life decisions, according to one Ben Tully. So, Ben, since you are the third loser in the tournament, what did you pilot at that deck, that tournament?
So I piloted a version of the Sith Hoth cards, I guess. Mm. So I was using two Killing Cold and Shadows in the Ice as my kind of Hoth-related cards. And then I also had one Mahdi pod and one of the Death Squadron Star Destroyer pods. The rest was fairly standard. Vader, Emperor, the draw pod.
So no Devastators?
No Devastators, no Devastators.
So it was basically the Hoth Lockdown minus Cruel Interrogations plus the new pod?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I had decided earlier in the week that I just wasn't liking that anymore. Did you feel like with so many shields available for Rebels, it just wasn't able to control as well as it used to be able to?
I found when I, so I, that deck won all of the games except for the games against Tyler. And Tyler played very well. He had some amazingly powerful draws. So yes, and I think it was definitely a shield related thing. He was running a Smuggler's Cavern deck, and it wasn't so much that it was one or two shields that he was getting. He kept getting three or four Guardians on the table at the same time. And so I felt like I had enough control for one Guardian. Mm. But it was the mix of, like, he'd be like, let me draw this hand. Here's one Guardian. I'd be like, oh, cool, Vader Force Choke. He's like, deflect. Here's another Guardian. Here's another Guardian. And here's Han Solo. I think that was an exact replica of one of his turns at one point. And I went, wow, that's really strong. And he's like, yeah, I didn't have anything in my hand until that very moment.
Well, that sounds like a good hand.
It does sound like a good hand. I think coming away from it, and I was talking to Neil, we carpooled up and we were heading back together last night and we were discussing it. I think I would change the deck going into next week's regional that we're having at Game Empire. And I think the changes I would make is I would pull out all of the Hoth cards.
Yeah,
so take out both Killing Colds and Shadows on the Ice. And I would probably put in a Devastator pod. And I'm not sure if two Cruel Interrogations or one Cruel Interrogations and potentially something like another Council of the Sith.
What would be your reason for Cruel Interrogations?
More tactics icons, just to have the ability to, you know, for the times when those tactic icons are really important, having just two more just seemed like I was always one shy of having the necessary tactics icons. And if it was, you know, if it was just because of Smuggler's Cavern or Echo Base Cavern is how it is called.
Yeah.
It's just yellow to me. It's the yellow cavern card.
Yeah, the broken card is what I call it.
You know, it was always one of those things where I just had one less tactics than I needed. And it normally happened to do with, you know, the shields were there and
right.
Echo Base Cavern was always a problem. And so, yeah, it became difficult.
I agree. I feel like Hoth, for now, is not the best in the meta. I've been running on the stream that I've been doing something I'm calling the Devastating Sith, which is pretty similar. It's two Palpatines, two Vaders, two of the draw pod, two Devastators, one of the new Imperial starships, and then one Ice Tromper pod. which basically gives you 3 twists, tons of resources, 8 big characters, Jedi hate. And what it sacrifices is a lot of those random tactics guys. But what I've been finding is that a lot of people are running Rebels, and with those new Rebel speeders, they all have a shield on them. So, like, a single tactics guy does nothing. It has to be somebody who has a bunch of tactics like Palpatine, or a one tactics guy just hasn't been doing that much for me.
Nope, that's true, and I could see that. I mean, I'm only thinking about running the interrogation droid with having Palpatine also going into the battle, just having that 4th tactics for that type of battle. But yeah, no, you're right with the one. So that's interesting with the 8. I mean, those are really big characters. Have you found that you've been getting resource screwed at all?
Quite the opposite, actually. I've got resources every game. The only problems I've had are, like, late game when I want a character and I'm drawing, like, another control room which has 0 force icons. That is more the issue than the reverse. I almost always have plenty of resources all the game. It's led to a lot of turn 2 Palpatines. Like when I was running the Sith deck, you know, sometimes I would get turn 2 Palpatine, but it would often take till turn 4 before he came out. Whereas with this deck, whenever I draw turn 2, pretty much hits the board. So it's often turn 2 is usually either a Devastator, a Vader, or a Palpatine. And then turn 3, I'm often following up with another big guy. And so it tends to be a lot of pressure and control that I'm able to exert right away. So if my opponent's deck is going slow, I can devastate or knock something out. If my opponent's deck is working well, I have big things to block with.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like it would work. I mean, it sounds like how I would change it. You know, Cruel Interrogations just seems... And, you know, sometimes it's not even the Cruel Interrogations is in terms of in getting the interrogation droids that seems the strongest. It seems like, you know, whenever I needed a card, my opponent always had interrogation in their hand. Just like, come on.
And they
paid it for one, and because they had the Emperor's Web out, and it always just became pretty brutal that way.
Yep, I agree. That card is really phenomenal. That's the one card I really miss. An interrogation droid is really cool, like if they're saving one card.
Or two cards, yeah, exactly.
Right, they've been saving it a while, and they're maxing out their resources every turn, and you know, like, that's a good card. You know, if I can play this guy, boom, they lose it, and they're real upset.
Yeah, I mean, that it has its utility, and that, so it might even be utility beyond the tactics icons. That's what I really like about it. But knowing me, I would never draw those cards at the appropriate time, and I would... You know, tactics their hand when they just had a whole 6 resources, and they're like, "Oh, cool! Thanks for taking out one of these useless cards in my hand."
I was gonna block with 3PO just to dump my hand.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, what were you running as your light side deck?
For the light side, I was running a Hoth rebel.
Wait, let's stop for a second. Then I have to ask you, hey Ben, are rebels just terrible?
I really, really liked this deck going into the tournament. I still really, really like this deck, even though it lost 3 times. So it won 3 and lost 3.
That sounds like a rebel deck.
Sounds like a rebel deck. I think, I can't remember exactly all the scenarios. I think what happened at least once was the person who I was playing, either Neil or Tyler, just got an amazing start. And it threw me off my strategy of how I would been playing the deck. And I just really couldn't get through. And then a couple of times there was a big swing, and it wasn't a big swing in an edge battle. It was a big swing, like I had a scenario that was, you know, pretty good spread of units on the table. And whoever I was playing against was like, "Oh, I'll force lightning, force choke, use Vader," and cleared out all of these smaller characters. When I had, like, you know, I went into the battle having, you know, 6 or 7 units on the table, and then it came out of the battle with 2. And I was like, okay, well, all of that progress that I had just made in trying to get board presence had just been completely stripped away. And then, you know, when that happens, I normally can't come back, and so I try more desperate tactics that never pan out. But what I had been playing with this deck, and so this deck is almost all Hoth cards and includes the new smuggler set, the Renegade Squadron set. It includes 2 sensors are placed, two Hoth operations, one preparation for battle, one home one, and two of the defense of Yavin 4. I don't know if I hit 10 on that one. If I didn't, and you want to know what the rest of the deck was, just email us or Facebook us. But I think that's about what it was. And, you know, it really, when it was amazing. And the strategy behind it was really, and had been, and was something that had been developing. And this was Neil's deck that he played in the tournament and won with a couple weeks ago in our local meta. And I was like, hey, do you mind if I play it? You know, I really liked how it played. You know, I want to see how it works out. He's like, sure, go ahead. Neil's a normal, really nice guy about letting people just co-opt his ideas. I would say steal, but we talked about it afterwards, so we're now becoming a more collaborative effort.
So but, it was stolen, now it's a collaboration.
Sure, something like that. And the strategy behind it had been working really well, was you would put out as many units as you could for 3 or 4 turns, and really it would kind of scare the opponents I was playing, because I would put out, you know, 3 units, and then they would put out a couple units and have the force, and the force would go up, and they'd be like, and I say, I pass, and they're like, you're not attacking, and I'm like, nope, I'm not attacking, and they would put out a couple units, and then it would be my turn, and I'd put out all the units I could, and I would say, I'm not attacking, and they would go, you're not attacking, and I would go, nope. And
so
now the tile's at 5 or 7, and I'm right. I'm like, okay. And so the next round, I might put out one card, but now I have what would normally be somewhere in the realm of 7 to 9 units. And they would vary in strength from the AAC1 speeder tank to Hoth, what are the Hoth weenies that have the white tactics icon that are 2/2 and gain blast icons, edge-dependent blast icons for the number of Hoth objectives. I can't think of the name of it. You know, I would have something like that. But then I would normally also have something maybe like a Rogue 3 on the table and a Y-Wing and a speeder. And if I had Hoth operations out, like those speeders became much more potent in terms of their offensive ability. And maybe I would have a home one. And I would have 5 cards in my hand ready for the edge battle. And in that one turn or 2 turns, even with your opponent having, you know, maybe 5 to 6 characters on the table, you could just go and hit hard and just take out the objectives that you needed in those, like, really quickly, 1-2 turns. You know, damage one, destroy one, come in the next time, finish it off, and destroy another one. It's playing in that kind of delayed hold the units back attack really seemed to throw people off and allowed you to really split your attacks in a way that made it hard for your opponent to decide where to defend and who to defend with and what the best case scenario was, especially if you had something like shields that you could play. So if you were attacking, you know, and had a strong attack and you could use the AAC1 speeder tanks to play shields, or you had Echo Base shield generator or any of those combinations of shielding units, you put those shields down, even if they had a lot of tactics, you could shut it down, and then you would just take out the objectives. And so I still really like the deck. And one of the games I played against Tyler and lost with it in, I had an amazing hand start. I had the Renegade Squadron mobilization. I had sensors in place, and I had Hoth operations. And I was like, sweet, this is the ideal Hoth start. And he played both his Killing Colds and Shadows on the Ice. And so all of the Hoth abilities were shut down because we had the same number. And he was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. I just played it. And then by turn 3 or 4, I had done some damage. And then the Killing Cold or Desolation of Hoth came out and did some damage and cleared off a portion of my board. And I was just like, come on. Like, how you have 3 of them in your – it was a 40% chance of that happening, and you did it. Like, you just – and so –
yeah, that really is unfortunate.
Yeah, and so, you know, it was that type of luck doesn't help when you're relying on getting the cards that you need in the first place.
Right. I just feel like that is the definition of Rebels. Like, there's just so many things that can undo everything you're trying to do, including just drawing the wrong cards. That's why I personally have not come around. But I would like to give a shout out to Neil. I feel like he's the guy who's really helping make Rebels better in our meta, that he's been very creative in trying out interesting Rebel decks that don't look viable to me. And then when I see him play them, I say, oh, wow, you know, that's pretty viable. Like, I mean, I had built a Rebel deck that I didn't like, and he built one that was just better than what I built.
It seems to happen pretty often.
Well, alrighty then. All right, so anything else you want to tell us about the tournament?
I mentioned how awesome the store was. I mentioned how much fun it was. We had 11 players. No, I think that covers all of my bases. All
right, well, let me congratulate then both Neil and Tyler, two really nice guys. I'd say probably the two nicest guys in the meta, not to belittle anyone else except for maybe Ben.
They're definitely nicer than you by far.
Oh, come on. Who's nicer than me?
By like leaps and bounds, they are nicer than you.
Yeah, Tyler's probably the nicest person I've ever met in my life. So congrats to Tyler. Congrats to Neil. It really, to me, is a testament of how good and deep our meta is that, you know, like, we're pretty good, but there by no means can we roll into a regional and be like, hey, we have a podcast. We know what we're doing. We're going to win. Like, our meta just doesn't work like that.
Our meta is so strong. It reminds me very much of our Game of Thrones meta.
Yeah, it really does. I'm quite happy about that. I'd like to do a bit of a mea culpa real quick. So last week we reviewed a chapter pack.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, yes, my mistake. So 2 weeks ago we reviewed a chapter pack, and I don't remember my exact words, but I certainly did not think that Death Squadron Command was a good card.
Oh yeah, you definitely hated that card.
It's 3 cost for 3 resources. My logic was something like, you know, you're paying 3, and if you're triple focusing it or double focusing it, it's down for too long. I'm going to have to say that card's phenomenal. I'm an idiot. Let's put that on the record. I'm a moron.
I do like how quickly you're... of all the people, at least you admit eventually when you're wrong. You can still be sitting there going like, you know, it's terrible. No, it's too much. It's too expensive. And so I'm glad that, you know, when you see a card is better, you quickly, you know, put your tail between your legs and run towards it as fast as you can.
Yes, I mean, to me, that's the mark of a good player, is one who's willing to say, yep, I was wrong, that card's awesome, I'm using it, right? You don't want to be stubborn and be like, no, I said it was bad, ergo, it's bad.
It's amazing that being a flip-flopper makes you a good player, and that just happens to be one of your personal qualities.
Every personal quality of mine are the personal qualities of a good player, whatever they are. I don't even know them all. All right, but back to reality. What makes this card so awesome is especially if you realize, like, okay, my opponent's playing Rebels. He's got me in this crosshairs. He's going to knock out 2 objectives next turn. You can just triple focus this, knowing that 2 objectives are going down. And if he doesn't knock out 2 objectives because he's worried about that, well, that's awesome. That buys you more time. And the same thing with if you're going to play a Devastator, and you're planning on knocking out some objectives, you can do 1 focus on it. It comes off when you knock out the objective, then you trigger Devastator to put another one on it to click that dial up. You can do that multiple times in a turn. You can double focus it knowing you're going to knock out an objective, and then when your refresh comes around, another one will come off. It's a really, really amazing versatile card. So my bad. It's awesome. Ignore what I said previously.
It does take a lot of pre-planning with it. And so it's one of those cards where I think when you look at it on paper, it's a 3, you know, it's the 3/3 cost. And you were looking at it completely on paper, have never tried it, never seen it played, and just like, well, that's just too expensive. But it's one of those cards where if you are a good player, you can come up with ways that make it stronger and more viable. And it requires a lot of pre-thinking, future thinking about what's going to happen and what you can reliably to believe the game state will be next turn or 2 turns from now, and then playing that card and having an idea of what you're going to do with it.
Yeah, it definitely feels like kind of a pro player's card to me, and those are the cards that I really like. I feel like Echo Caverns is the same kind of card, that it has all this versatility and that lesser players will use it in one way, and pro players will be able to do even more interesting, gut-wrenching things with the card.
gut-wrenching indeed.
So, Ben, we had a question last week that we didn't get to. Neil, a local player in our meta that you might have met before, he was wondering, how do we integrate the new cards from chapter packs into what we're doing? Basically, he's wondering, do we just try to insert them into existing decks, or do we sort of tear everything down, start from scratch, and try to build something new with a new card pool that we have?
Both? Can I just say both?
That seems fair.
Does that seem fair? So with the new cards that just came out in Search of Skywalker, I did both. I think I tried both at one point, where I tried Smuggler's Cavern and had, you know, various personal views on how it did and what it was like. And I also completely scrapped down my Dark Side deck and put in the new Jabba's Orders objective in a Trooper deck, where I was using Take Them Prisoner and that capture mechanic to try and get the weak ways out faster and just kind of overwhelm my opponent with troopers. It didn't work that well, but I definitely just scrapped my whole deck and was like, let's see how this goes.
Yeah, I did the same. I mean, I've had a little bit more time this quarter, and so like I always start with my Game of Thrones approach. Like, there's a new pack that comes out. In Game of Thrones, it doesn't change much. You take the good cards, you put them in your deck. So, like, I took a Sith Control deck and went, I wonder if I could just take out Mahdi and put in the Weak Way Elites, bump up one more Cruel Interrogations, and run that. And it was good. I mean, it had a lot of control. It just couldn't blow up any objectives. It didn't work well against a new Rebel, slightly more consistent approach. I took my Jedi deck that's been working very well and just subbed out Message from Beyond and put in the new Smugglers pod, and that worked really well. I was happy with that. But then, like Ben said, I also took a whole bunch of new archetypes and just completely wrecked everything and like built maybe 12 different Rebel decks, and they were all awful. And then built a bunch of different Sith Navy decks to try to work it out. I built that same Trooper deck you did, found it to be lacking. But it just feels like, since every pack changes the meta so much, I don't think you can reliably just go, I'll just sub this one out for that one out and then be done. I think you really have to do wholesale changes.
And I think it's more fun that way. I mean, I've at this point tried all of the new objectives that came out in this last chapter pack. I've tried them all, and I have a better idea of how they fit in. And it's just fun because the card pool is so small, you just kind of want to see how they do in different decks. Even if it's, you know, just, I'll just see, try it once. I'm going to put in Jabba's Orders in one deck and see how it plays. I didn't do that well. Okay, well, that was fun. I got a better idea of how it plays, and I'll just put it away and not think about it until more Scum and Villainy cards come out.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think you're right. It is important that you have some awareness of each of the different objectives and how they work, so that every time a new pack comes out, pretty soon it's going to be overwhelming when new packs come out and like when the box hits and there's all these different decks. If you've already played all the existing objectives and you kind of know how they work, I think it's going to be a lot easier to build new things.
Agreed.
So Ben, I'd like to start something new. One of our other listeners suggested this. Whenever a new pack comes out, give it a week, give it 2 weeks, and evaluate what's the best pod in the game right now. And I'm going to qualify that with in the current meta.
So I can't use a pod that's not currently released? Is that what you're telling me on that one?
Well, yes, yeah, certainly it has
to be. So I couldn't say the Wookiee pod.
No. It has to be released. And also within the confines of this meta, like something on paper might look really amazing, but in this particular moment, it doesn't seem to be working as well as you might have thought it would.
So I think one of the objectives that is the objective that is the best in the meta right now has to be Renegade Squadron Mobilization.
Okay, so that's your pick for the best objective in the meta?
I think it is the best objective in the meta.
And why have you been finding it to be so good, especially in this meta?
Well, it's the combination of all of the parts in the objective. And the objective itself is really, 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 really strong with light side and being able to pick off your opponent's units. And so I saw it used very effectively in the Smuggler's Cavern deck with Targeted Strike, where you're just pinging off units and drawing cards. It shuts down Ice Trompers because your opponent doesn't really want to remove one of their units from the table to give you a card. Even if it does a damage that kills one of your characters, you're replacing it with a card very quickly, and you lose unit presence on the board. I feel very limited when I have an Ice Tromper on the board, and when I was playing with somebody who had that objective on the table, I found myself just not playing Ice Trompers. I'm not going to use it to pull things out of the battle, so why even put it on the table? Was my thought process.
That's half of the reason of playing him is they have to play cards to win the edge battle, and if you're giving them more edge cards to win the next edge battle with it, it really takes the teeth out of him.
Definitely takes the teeth out of them.
Any other cards?
Well, yeah, obviously I really like the Renegade Squadron. Is that what it's called?
Okay.
The Renegade Squadron, mainly because I like its unit or its icon distributions and the fact that it's elite.
Yeah.
And the fact that it has 5 health capacity. So I like a lot of things about it.
Yep.
It has 5 health capacity. It has a non-edge dependent unit damage, blast damage, and tactics, and then a second tactics if you win the edge, which is amazing. Its ability is great if you happen to be going against a capture deck, but so far I think I've only triggered it once. I think the unit itself is pretty amazing. And then obviously the card, which you have now called the broken card several times, Echo Base Caverns, which is just a phenomenal control card. And I think to some degree, the Rebel deck that I was running and the Rebel decks in general that run this card are benefiting from the control that that card gives you. And so as much as Rebels are, relying a little bit on a setup that's kind of more ideal than less ideal, having that card gives you some of that redundancy of it doesn't have to be perfect because you can control how many icons a certain conflict is going to have when you desire.
Yep. And I think the fact that it can be used in both Rebel and Jedi with great effectiveness. It has the Hoth trait. It really is a great card in the meta. Or a great pod.
I'm trying to think what the other 3 cards are in that.
You got the little guy, the Munitions Expert.
Oh, the Munitions Expert, and then you have the Renegade Squad guy.
Yep, the Operative.
And then the Target of Opportunity, is that what's in there?
Yep. Yeah. So it's really top to bottom a high-quality pod.
I really like that Munitions guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Put him out for 1, he's neutral, and then all of a sudden, I definitely, the first time it came to the table, I was like, yeah, whatever. And my opponent was like, and now I'm going to focus him and give my unit 3 unit damage. And I was like, oh, that's problematic.
Yeah.
And so it becomes even more problematic if the unit they're giving it to is Han or Luke, or Han or Luke with Trust Your Feelings on them.
With Targeted Strike.
Targeted Strike.
Yep, he just wipes out the board.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I'm not going to say that's the best pod in the meta, but, man, it's really, really good.
So, Tiny, what would you say is the best pod in the meta?
To me, it's a toss-up between the Emperor's pod and Han's pod, and I think I'm still going to go with Han's pod.
So both of the Smugglers and Spies objectives are the best objectives in a game, in our opinion. Do you think it's just because we call our podcast the Smuggler's Den?
I'd like to think not. I think what it is for me is because they're both amazing top to bottom. They both have resources in them, which is critical. They both have a really great objective. Questionable Contacts with Protectors is absolutely a monster to deal with, especially when you throw in Lightsaber Deflections from another pod. They think they're going to kill your guy. They don't. Questionable Contacts then turns around and kills their guy, and it's just so hard to deal with. Then Han, of course, is just utterly amazing. Swindled is so good, and especially with the new pod, it basically replaces itself.
For 1 resource.
And then the Twi'lek Smuggler, of course, is really amazing with Protectors. And Crossfire is a really versatile 1-cost event. Does a lot of things. So
in general, we just really, really want more Smugglers and Spies cards.
I mean, this is the scary part, right? When that box drops and you get Lando and you get Chewbacca
and the Millennium Falcon, oh my god.
Right. We're going to be like, I believe there are other ways to play this game, but you really should just play Smugglers.
Just play Smugglers for the light side. Like,
it's now going to become, hey, Ben, are Rebels and Jedis terrible? So we'll see if that happens. But certainly the Smuggler objectives are looking very, very strong. And not just strong, but strong top to bottom. And I think this is what's going to make them long-term good. I think when we have a mature card pool and we go to build pods, you're going to look at those pods with three great cards and two cruddy cards and go, why would I run this pod? I've got two cruddy cards in it, whereas now I have all these pods that have five good cards.
Right. I mean, I can't imagine that all Smugglers and Spies pods going off into forever are going to have five good cards in it, but...
Yeah, I would hope not. That'll be really a bad idea for the game, but who knows? Maybe. I just wanted to mention that Kubla Khan is coming up May 24th to 27th. It's a gaming convention in which Ben will be there, I'll be there, a number of other people from our Star Wars meta, as well as our Game of Thrones meta. It's one of those great conferences where we all get together and just have an amazing time. And it's over Memorial Day weekend, and the Star Wars event is on Friday, and the Game of Thrones event is on Saturday. Now, I haven't been there. I'm looking forward to going this year, but I've heard it's awesome. Ben, is it awesome?
Really? You weren't there last year?
Nope.
Wow, that's amazing. I can't even remember most of the weekend, so that's I just assumed that you had been there. Yeah, as Tiny said, Kubla Khan is a huge con. Starts on a Friday, ends on a Monday on Memorial Day weekend. It has so much, it's really hard to describe. It has so much gaming going on, and it happens all within the Burlingame, California Hyatt Regency, which is really close to SFO. Like, so close, it's less than like a $10 taxi ride. I think the hotel has its own shuttle from the airport. It's that close. It's like the airport area where people coming in and out of SFO go. And it's just, I've been twice. The first year was a huge tease because all I got to do was play in two events, one nighttime event for Thrones and then the Thrones regional. And then I had to get out. It was a very quick tease. Last year I went for 4 days. I went Thursday night up and we got up there early, and you know, the con hadn't really started, but there were lots of people who we knew who were there, and we just kind of played casually. And then the con was just amazing. It was games all the time. They have a board game room where you can go in and sign out board games. You can sign up for tournaments of board games. They have number of card games going on, including all of the LCGs. I know Netrunner's on the Sunday, and that they play Magic and WoW and all of the other many, many collectible card games out there. There's a huge cosplay role-playing scenarios that go on. I very rarely venture anywhere near them, but I know that they're very extensive and have a very big presence. There's a...
Ben, hold on. Who are you going as this year?
Who am I?
Are you going as Tiny Grimes?
Oh, man. That would be the worst cosplay in the world.
It would be the funniest by far.
And then on top of that, you know, there's miniature games, and it's the whole hotel, and it's really self-contained, and there's no traveling, and you don't have to do all of this other stuff. You're just going to wake up, and you go downstairs, and there's people playing games, and it's open 24 hours. All the game rooms are 24 hours, and everybody just seems to be having a good time. If that's your deal, if you're a gamer and you love gaming, Kubla Khan is probably an amazing California con and probably one of the better, bigger cons out there for this type of thing that isn't Gen Con.
Yeah, so come out to California. It's great anyway. Hang out with us. And let's say you can't afford Kubla Khan. If you volunteer 8 hours to the con, you actually get free admission to the con. Can't beat that.
And that's a $60 value for the whole weekend pass.
Nice. So I assume we'll be seeing all our listeners at Kubla Khan. So I look forward to seeing you over Memorial Day.
Yep. Check it out. KublaCon.com.
So the rest of the show, we're going to have a guest, Tyler, from our local meta. And Tyler is the regional champion of last week's regional that Ben was like the fourth loser at. So Tyler, congrats on your win.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thanks for having me on the show.
And is this the first major card event you've played in, or are you a very experienced player?
No. I'm a fairly experienced player. I took seventh at the regionals for the previous Star Wars card game, the TCG. That was like 6 years ago. And my brother took second on that, but that was a really large, I mean, there was like 50 players in that, which is great. And then I'm the Battlestar Galactica card game champion. They didn't have Worlds, but they had the largest one they had was at Gen Con in Indianapolis, and I won that 2 years in a row. So that was good. Although those pools were smaller, the first one was like 30, and then the second one was only like 12 because the card game was failing at that point. But this is the first official tournament for the current Star Wars card game, the LCG. And it was really fun, really nerve wracking, but it was a super good experience.
Wow, that's really neat. I didn't realize you were a card playing veteran, and I also didn't realize Battlestar Galactica had a card game.
Yeah, most people don't know that. It was really good, but it wasn't managed super well, and they sort of made a couple cards that broke the meta. So the few players that could have made it like really last just got really fed up when the next set came out, and they're like, "This is just." It's too hard to deal with. It was just like one or two cards that made it that way. But yeah, I didn't do too well. But it was a really fun game.
Huh. Well, all right. So my first question for you is, what was your preparation like for the event?
I guess it was figuring out what I wanted to play leading up to that. We had our league tournament at Game Empire, not last Wednesday, but the Wednesday before that. You and I, Tiny and I, play tested a bunch before that tournament, and my light side deck didn't change at all after that. I played it at that tournament, single elimination, and I was very happy with it. The games I lost with it was a luck of the draw sort of situation, but, so that didn't change at all. So I didn't even warm up with that deck again when I went to play at regionals. But my dark side deck, I had a lot of more questions about. And when I played against the in that tournament, the person who ultimately ended up taking first in our league, Neil, I saw the changes between his dark side deck and my dark side deck. And there were really only I think there were two objectives or three objectives different. It's a, Sith control with a splash of Navy in it. And mine was actually at the time a lot of Navy and just, medium Sith. And his was a little bit more mixed out. And I really liked that. And so I took a good look at it. And when I rationalized it through, I think my deck ended up being either one objective different than his or very close to his. So it worked. And it worked well. So that was my preparation leading into it. And a lot of it was just luck of the draw,
So just to be clear, you stole Neil's deck and then beat him with it in the finals.
I guess you could say that, but actually technically I lost my dark side deck. His dark side deck, I lost against him. But my light side deck played twice. Cause in the final, I ended up meeting Neil for the final game and we hadn't played each other besides that in the tournament. So he ended up taking second, but I played with my light side, which beat his dark side, which was also the same deck as my dark side. I think, we didn't compare notes, but I believe it's identical. And then his light side beat my dark side, and then my light side ended up beating his dark side again. So I'm actually sort of re-questioning my dark side in that regards because it lost three times, if you look at it that way, in the final round.
And so you actually got a true draw and had to end up playing a best of three for the championship, correct?
In the finals... It wasn't a true draw. We stopped as soon as he was going to win the tiebreaker. And in the finals, it was if you tie, the tiebreaker is a third game, untimed right. game. So in that regard, we got a true draw. We stopped once the dial was like – once it hit eight or once he destroyed the objectives, then we went on to it. And it was like as long as – the longest games we could have possibly had. and the final game ended up being my light side versus his dark, and it was so neck and neck continuously, and it ended up the dial went all the way to 11 before I was able to destroy the last objective. So it was on the edge of our seats the whole time. We just, I had to go get, I wanted to get like a massage afterwards. I had so much stress and nervous energy from it.
Yeah, I thought everyone had abandoned me because I couldn't make it. So people are texting me and I hear like, all right, the finals is starting. And like 4 hours later, I'm like, what is going on? Who won? Yeah. Oh, no, that's they're really, still playing.
Like how long it took because there was no time. And so the games just went, well, many of the games went really long and everyone after playing on time limit. And I went to my time like or within 4 minutes of time limit on every single round. So having not had a time limit, I was like, look, I'm going to sit and think about this, make sure I'm not making mistakes, which was a blessing.
What were your expectations going in the event? Did you think you were going to win or were you hoping for a top four or a top eight?
I had two things I really wanted to have happen. I didn't want to lose my first round, just because that's demoralizing. And then I wanted to make top four. If I made top four and walked away, I would be like, man, that was really fun. I got to play a ton of good games with good players. And then when we got to top four, I was actually the first seat. I was doing very well. And then I got paired. The last game going into the top four, I was playing Ben. And I beat him a strong win. It was, you know, two wins to zero. And then when we got paired to top four, ironically, it ended up being Ben was the fourth seed and I was the first seed. So we ended up playing each other again. And that was sort of a sigh of relief because I knew I just beat him. So at that point, it was like, okay, well, now I just want to, you know, just don't mess up enough. Get to top one or two. And I'll be very happy with that because everyone, you know, they were such good games and just one bad draw here or there could have changed all of that throughout the course of it. So,
right. I'm very much looking forward to Ben hearing you say playing him was a sigh of relief.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Ben. Sorry. Much respect and love. He's an excellent player, and he's very fun to play against because he's very calm, and he doesn't, like, freak out. Sometimes I do. he was very enjoyable player to it. But honestly, I mean, I think he sort of knew that when it happened because I really had just one, and just the way that our decks had paired up, you know how it goes. So.
Yeah, matchups can be really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and if I had played Brian, my games against Brian was the third seat, and I had played Brian earlier, and our games were very close. I mean, within 1 point of winning each other. So, I had a better pairing, I think, to get to the finals.
All right. And what decks did you play then?
So I played. My dark side was all three dark side Hoth ones, the two ice trump or the two killing colds and shadowy figures or whatever it's called. Oh, shadows on the ice. Mm-hmm. And then the rest was Sith control. It had two emperors, a Vader, a interrogation droids, and a pod 20, whatever that one's called.
Only one Vader, did you say?
Yeah, only one Vader, yeah. Mm. I saw a lot of the other ones were running two Vaders, like especially the regional winners previously. I understand it, but I wanted more flexibility from it, and it worked out. Although I was really worried about the resources. I was afraid of running two Vaders and two Palpatines without a Mahdi, and would be a big problem. Oh, the big difference is that I'll have to stop. The last two pods are, let me look it up. The new Empire one, the deploy the fleet. So
okay.
I had four Death Squadron Star Destroyers in the deck. So that's a lot of six cost units. So I didn't want to run too many without having a Mahdi in there, was a big problem. And I do think that Neil ended up running the same thing, but I really rationalized myself into that build and then was like, wait, is this what Neil's running? And it was, but that inevitably happens.
Yeah. I mean, we were pretty close to that build anyway when we were testing.
Totally, totally. And I think before it was almost exactly the same, except I dropped a Vader and something else. Oh, and the Shadows on the Ice for two Devastator pods. So I pretty much dropped those two out, added a Vader, added Shadows on the Ice, and that worked out. On the light side, I was running, it was Jedi with both Smugglers and Spies pods. So it was Han and the Echo Caverns pods, two of each. And then two Lukes, two Yodas, and two Protectors.
So as we're calling it here on the Smuggler's Den, the Smuggler's Caverns.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Smuggler's Cavern, yeah. I wasn't sure if that had all four of them in it or not.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
Smuggler's Cavern, yeah. Which worked great. I never got screwed on pulling, like, four of the Smuggler's objectives at this regional. At the last tournament, I definitely got screwed and pulled all four of them.
Oh, wow.
And then... I pulled three of them and took the one Jedi one, but then he killed the Jedi one and the fourth Smugglers and Spies one came out.
So that
was against Neil, actually. It was like worst draw possible. So it's possible to get screwed on it, but I had every other game, every lightsaber game I played, I drew a and you must go, and it was crucial to all the games because almost every game I was able to drop a resource for free and play a five cost card or play two fours and keep an extra bonus card in there, and that made a really big difference.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like that objective is why I'm just not willing to drop the Yoda pod. It's just such a good objective.
So good, and you know, more than one game, I was like, man, I'm in trouble, and then I pulled a Yoda with the Trust Your Feelings, was able to play them for only four resources, and then destroy not one, but even two objectives or have them help. Like,
yeah.
if you attack with someone who has tactics like Han or the Renegade Squad, and they're forced to sort of fight that battle first, and then Yoda's left off to run around and do whatever he wants.
Right. And especially if you have an Echo Caverns where you can give him another blast icon that he can then have in both of those battles.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't run into that ever with Yoda, but I ended up putting Trust Your Feelings on Han, like, four or five times throughout it. And
wow.
Of course, I know you guys have talked about Echo Caverns a bunch. It's just an incredible card, but it just shuts down Palpatine. Like, a Guardian shielding Han and then stealing off a tactics icon from the Emperor just means that they have to, like, double focus him. And then if I had a Trust Your Feelings, it was still like I don't really mind this very much. Like, I still attack. And
plus, you kill Palpatine at that point.
Yeah, exactly, because you damage him when you attack and then targeted strike. So that happened, I think, three times throughout all my different games, was Han by himself with either Echo Caverns or Trust Your Feelings able to take out Palpatine.
Right. So. Did you have any cards you would call your MVP cards for the tournament?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, Echo Caverns is definitely a top one for me. I mean, I think I just touched them all, but Echo Caverns is huge, and then the Inu Must Go, drawing that every single time. I actually, like, that did me more benefit than the Renegade Squadron pod, like the drawing the extra cards.
Mm-hmm.
I actually ditched that in favor of it a couple times.
Okay.
So, especially with the Protector pod, being able to, like, pull out the Yavin 4 Temple and protect my own objectives, that, like, helped with tiebreakers because they would attack the wrong objective and I would move it at the last minute.
Right.
So I would say the Echo Caverns and In You Must Go were really huge for me. And then on the dark side of things, the one card that won me a clutch game was, ironically enough, the Desolation of Hoth. You know, you always just hope that somebody attacks a light side or a... And playing against Ben, a game that totally won me, he was going to kill an objective, and I was able to pull, you know, the Desolation of Hoth or damage off of it on my turn and destroy his Rogue Squadron and stuff, which I would have a hard time killing normally because of its health.
Right. You can get Desolation of Hoth. That's just an absolute game changer.
Huge game changer. And actually, the other thing was that I had, he was playing a Hoth Rebel. And I pulled two Killing Colds and a Shadows on the Ice. So he didn't even have control of the Hoth objectives. And that just shut a ton of what he was trying to do down. And I had pulled a single Hoth objective the entire tournament. Until that game, I pulled all three of them.
Oh, my goodness. Well, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
I was really happy when I heard you won. As I already said earlier on the podcast, I consider you the nicest person in our meta, and you and Neil are probably the two nicest, so it was really cool of you guys to be in the finals.
So he was a pleasure. You know, I just want to say to if anybody from our meta, you know, when they're listening to this, that every game was such a pleasure to play. Everyone was very nice. They had, like, Brian was an incredible player. Neil's an incredible player. I've already talked about Ben. Like, they just, everyone was on their game, and there was very few mistakes. And it was so much fun. I was so nervous the entire time. Like I said, one draw bad here or there at the wrong time, and not, you know, I wouldn't have been there. So,
yeah, I was proud of all you guys. Our meta basically rolled into that store, took all the top spots, and then went home.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm not sure actually if I'm going to end up playing in Game Empire's regionals or not. If I have nothing else to do, I will. But I spent so much time playing the last like 3 weeks. I mean, it's great, but I might root everybody on and see what's going on at that point.
Works sounds hard. Good. All right, let's move on. I have another topic I want to talk about. Do you go to Card Game DB at all?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, cardgamedb.com. We're looking to make really the rulings headquarters for the game. All the rulings are kind of spread out. So if you go to the forums for the site and go to Star Wars, there is a stickied forum at the top that says official rule clarification. So if you receive anything from FFG, please post them there. We're posting there. Also, under the card game database, if anyone has any questions about any cards, just ask them on those cards. We're trying to get discussions going on each of the cards that people have questions about. So when someone has a question, they can just click on a card and they'll see, oh, somebody already asked that. And I'm trying to link all the official rulings to each card.
That sounds great. Yeah, I see it here now, and this is perfect.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Well, every week we do something called a pod quiz. And Tyler, since you're the guest today, I thought you might like to be quizzed today.
Sure.
All right. So here's the quiz. I just put down a hidden outpost with my light side deck. What is your next question for me?
Which pod did the hidden outpost come from?
I show you the pod, or I show you the card, and you see the number 11 on the bottom.
Oh.
I picked that one, quote, at random.
Sure. I don't know. Those ones scare me. I didn't learn a lot. I have a whole list of it, and I even have a binder with all of them in there, and I try and like quiz myself before I start a game to like make sure I have it. But I'm not sure I can get 11 would mean it's in the Rebel pod.
All right. Good.
So, and cuz yes, Jedi, yeah. So, an 11, I'm going to guess that it is the Home One pod?
Yes, very good.
Woo! All right.
Do you happen to remember what objective that is?
Oh, God. Yeah, it's the... I can think of it, what it is. It's the objective that only vehicles can attack that objective.
Yep, and it is the Rebel Fleet.
The Rebel Fleet, thank you, yes. I mean, it's got Home One like in the picture almost, so it's, yeah. Rebel Fleet, there we go, that's what it's called.
All right, and what else is in this pod?
Let's see, it's got Home One, a Atromech droid.
A repair droid.
Repair droid, yes, yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry, the Atromech is the enhancement. But the repair droid, hidden outpost, a target of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm going to buy a vowel on the last one.
It is a vowel.
A Y-Wing.
A Y-Wing.
Yes. All right.
All right. Good job. I was hoping that would stump you, but you can't stump the champ.
What? I definitely don't know them all, but I'm fairly good. I would say I'm above average.
I'd say that's pretty darn good. I'm not sure I could name every card in the Home One pod because people aren't really playing it. I haven't been playing it.
You know, I was talking about that for 1 second. My dark side has a really hard time with Home One. It actually really put me in a tough spot on previous games, but in the regionals, I was extremely happy that I only ever came across it a couple times, even though people were playing with it, I was lucky enough to get rid of it with the Cruel Interrogations card. That's
yes, Interrogation.
Yeah, Interrogation. Yeah, I pulled that out twice on two different games, which was huge. And then I was able to force Lightning another one right after its first attack. But really, the dark side, the only way it has to deal with Home One is with Force Lightning, because it just has a reasonable amount of health. It's hard to deal direct damage to it. And if it attacks and gets through, like if you don't kill it in one attack, it gets to deal so much damage, you know, minimum of four, like two on the objective it's attacking plus two on the other ones it's not attacking. And that can just be brutal. So I was lucky. That was something I was afraid of going into regionals, just the Home One. But yeah.
All right. Well, good job. So the last segment this week is the card of the week. So, Tyler, I'll let you go first since you're new.
My card of the week is definitely, I gotta be, the Ice Tromper's objective. Of course, now I can't think of what it's called. The Killing Cold. The reason is you don't see it too often when it's actually out there. And when it is out there, people don't attack it very much for good reason, out of fear of the Desolation of Hoth. But with careful manipulation or defending of certain objectives, if people kill the objectives in certain orders, they can end up attacking the Killing Cold. And the reason it's really good is people often forget the ability on it that makes the one ability the Killing Cold has, which reads, action sacrificing unit you control to remove one damage from a friendly Hoth objective. I've seen more than twice, this has made a game changer when someone was certain they were going to blow it up. And as they attacked it mid-attack, I sacrificed a unit I didn't need or didn't care about and took one damage off of it or another Hoth objective. And then, like in the example versus Ben, he didn't blow up one of my other Hoth objectives. And then the following turn, I was able to pull off all four damage with the Desolation of Hoth and put it onto one of his units. And Neil did the same thing to me last week at the other tournament. And so it doesn't happen very often, but just because it doesn't happen often, people don't think about it. And now I've seen it three times that someone didn't realize that that could happen, and it totally lost them the game because of it. So I was very impressed by it, and I used that tactic to my advantage. So that's my card of the week, is the Killing Cold. Not to mention that it's an awesome. Ice Trompers are awesome. That's a good pod.
How about Ice Trompers versus Rebels?
Ooh, yeah, that, you know, it didn't do super well because there's so many vehicles. But, you know, in my Rebel games, I thought it wasn't going to do anything. And then I kept it, I put it out there, and the Rebels still have multiple units. They have that are characters. They have, let's see if I can look up their names real quick.
Maybe Akbar.
You know, I didn't see any Akbars, but the small troops that I did it to Leia once, yeah, which was great.
Rookie pilot.
When it didn't do anything to them. What's the in the new Hoth sets they have?
I'll
get you the name here. Scrolling through. So they have a Wedge. God, I hope that you never play Wedge. Echo Defenders. There are two Echo Defenders that get put out there. And also, if a Munitions Expert is out there as well, not that you like ever attack with him, but there are times. But the Echo Defenders, I had someone have three of those out, and that was rather scary because they had three Hoth objectives. They were rather brutal at that point. Mm. And one attack, I was attacking to destroy an objective, and he defended with all three Echo Defenders, and I Ice Trompered all three of them. So it's not as good as it is against Jedi, but it certainly came in handy and was able for me to win that game at the last minute because of it. So.
I'm assuming you're misremembering the scenario slightly, since Ice Trompers can only remove attacking characters.
Yes, I am. I am not. Okay. Thank you.
Just wanted to be clear. All right, my card of the week is the Death Squadron Command. I already had a my bad on this. The card's really fantastic. It is really versatile. If you're playing against Rebels, you know they're going to knock out some of your objectives. You can double focus it easily. It combos really well with a Devastator. When you knock out an objective, the focus comes off of it, then you refocus it for the Devastator, you do it again. I've had turns where I've been able to pick up two extra dial clicks just from having that card out. It really is a great card.
Yeah, what's nice too about it is you spend three resources on three different objectives to play it, which is expensive, of course, but then you can just immediately drop three resources on it and play whatever card you would normally play, and it didn't affect your turn at all in order to play something, and then next turn you probably won't destroy something or something will be destroyed, but the following turn after, something usually ends up getting destroyed either from the light side or from you being aggressive on the dark side, and then you get it back all of a sudden, and now you're generating way more resources, and it had almost no cost to you in that regard in order to play it. I think it's also a fantastic card.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us this week, Tyler.
Absolutely. And
good luck the rest of the tournament season. I hope you win all the regionals I'm not at.
Back at you, Tiny. Back at you. Thanks for having me on the Smuggler's Den. May the force be with you.